This is CliffCentral.com.
Yeah, it's a brand new week. Yes, yes, yes. Monday. You like that?
Sure. It's different.
It's a slightly optimistic and enthusiastic way to start the day. For many people, Monday is not enthusiastic and they don't like it at all. It irritates them if I'm too happy. I got an email about that once. Someone said, "You're too happy on a Monday, I don't like it."
What?
Cut that shit out. Yeah. So I said, all right. And it lasted a week.
Someone had issues.
I know. People get uptight. Wow. The weekend is over, but it's pretty much December the next weekend. So, You know what? If you're still not happy that it's a Monday, suck it up. It's one last week of the working year, really and truly. You forget about December. We've said this before. Nobody gets anything major done then. Get over yourself. All right? And stop moaning.
Yeah.
You know, you're not in Somalia. You're not in Syria. You're alive. You can hear us. We can hear you.
You have a job.
You have a job. And if you don't have a job, just cut that part out of the podcast. Because I just saw this. This is pretty disturbing, actually. Youth unemployment.
Uh-oh. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. No. This is just awful. I was actually going to save this for the things you need to know a little bit later on, but I might as well just give it to you now. We have the highest youth unemployment at 55% in the world.
Sure.
Yeah, it's pretty scary, actually. You know, it's not the kind of thing that you want to hear first thing in the morning, but there it is. You know, I have no point in hiding it from you. No point in pretending it isn't there when it's there.
What is the technical age of said youth
in that
sphere?
I would imagine it's anywhere up to 25.
Okay. 35 as well?
It's got up to 35. 35-year-old youth?
Maybe that's the youth league.
The anti-youth league keep their numbers up until at least 35. You remember that was the big story with Julius when he was in charge there. He's like, what? Really? You're a bit old for the youth league?
Let's go with 25.
So then. I think it's 25. But then the next countries after us are Greece and Spain. Ooh. Yeah, Greece has got like 40-something%, 42, 43. And then Spain is in the high 30s.
Yeah, but at least those young Greeks are pleasuring those old English women every summer.
Yeah.
So that's something.
Yeah. So they earn pocket money.
Yeah.
Not really. It's not employment. It's not meaningful, gainful employment.
Yeah, but at least they're busy, Gareth.
Yeah. I went to a Greek birthday party on Saturday.
Oh, whoopa!
I'll tell you what. There was so much food. I probably weigh 10 times what I usually do this morning. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, sister, we eat. You know, you get to a point in the evening where you don't know how to say stop.
No, but situations like that,
it smells so good,
and
it just looks so good, and it tastes so amazing, and like, why can't I live like this all the time? Oh, wait, I can. I can marry a Greek woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I can actually live like this the whole time.
And then you'll never get off the couch.
No, you won't. And I would become obese. Mm. But morbidly obese. I would become the biggest, fattest man you've ever seen in your life.
Ugh, but worth it.
So I felt so bad. I went to gym yesterday.
Well, you see, counteracting your previous decision.
Well, someone's got to, you know, no one's going to look after me. I've got to look after myself. It's like rule number one is your body is your responsibility.
Hey.
Anyway, so that was about my whole weekend is a birthday party on Saturday. I had a quiet night in on Friday. It was raining most of Friday and most of Saturday.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which was awesome. So I actually got into like a binge. Sorry.
<you.
laughs> Special. Treat for a Monday. Mm. I got into a binge marathon of Curb Your Enthusiasm on Friday night. I watched about 8 episodes in a row of the new season. This Larry David is an exhausting human being. If he was, and I think he's real. I think that's how he really is in his normal life.
Well, that's what makes this show so good, is that he is real. That is him.
He upsets everybody. He goes to dinner and complains about the water, that it's straight out of the tap, because in LA you don't do that. Then he goes to a funeral and he he screams fatwa that he's got a gun, and then everybody scrambles at the funeral. I mean, it's just, he is such a bastard. I love him. I just love him. He's so cool. Because there is no political correctness in this show. Everything that happens is his fault, and he doesn't have a filter. He doesn't have any way of being able to tell whether or not what he's doing is socially acceptable. And, you know, I do think that people like that are quite an asset to society, because they remind the rest of us that a lot of the rules that we follow are pretty dumb. We don't need all these dumb rules. And of course you can upset some people along the way, but occasionally break the rules. Remind people that it's not all so serious. He gets into this argument because at the gate to the country club that he goes to play golf at, there's this dude at the gate who, when you wind down your window, he has a long conversation with you. He talks about his cat and how his satellite television didn't work over the weekend.
Does he just volunteer that information?
He's a talker. You know how you meet those people who are talkers?
Mm-hmm. They are annoying.
They are annoying, but here's the problem is there's a very fine line. So if you start talking to people like that, they're going to think that's an invitation that you're friends and that they must tell you everything.
Uh-huh.
So they open up to you and you end up having these hour-long conversations that you don't want to be in. You don't really care about their cat or their satellite dish or anything else. They're not people that are particularly entertaining. Their stories are boring. They don't have a great way of telling them. But you're now trapped. And they think that you're very friendly because you're listening to them. You know how humans are. As soon as someone wants to hear our dull, mundane, dreary existence stories, we think, oh, what a wonderful person, because we're so narcissistic and solipsistic. Anyway, he realizes he has to reset the relationship, because most of the other people who go to the country club, they just keep the window up and they wave at him and he opens the boom and he goes in.
Mm.
But not Larry, because he started talking to him. So he tries to reset the relationship. He says to the guy, look.
Reset the relationship?
Yeah, because he realizes like it's adding 15, 20 minutes to his day to sit there and talk to this idiot at the gate. So he says to him, look, we've got to reset this relationship. I'm going to wave and you can just see me through. And the guy's like, all right, fine. And he's furious now. I thought we were friends.
Oh, no.
So now he hits the button and the boom goes up and he's angry. And it made me think about how many of us, you know, because we're in South Africa, we've got car guards and security guards at gates and all that kind of thing. So we have to do a lot of small talk. Mm-hmm. And I find myself being more than usual. I'm friendly. Like, hey, can you open the gate? Thanks so much. How are you? And, you know, if you ask how are you in South Africa, you get varied answers from people. Some people feel how are you is an invitation to share every piece of health information.
Their mini life story.
They turn it into their therapy session.
Right. And you just wanted to be polite. You just wanted to show that you don't think that you're too important to say hello. And you just want to show that you're a nice, decent human being who treats other decent human beings by greeting them. You didn't ask for the Spanish Inquisition, and you didn't ask for them to have to volunteer a whole bunch of information about themselves that you aren't particularly interested in. And it happens a lot in this country. You know, the person at the till when you check out, hi, how are you? I'm fine, thanks. That's it? Yes, that's all. I'm fine.
Yeah.
I'm not about to tell you that, you know, yesterday I made a bad trade on Bitcoin and lost out on a major up, or I'm not going to tell you that I've been single for a couple of months now, and sometimes it's nice when you're not single, and sometimes I'm a bit lonely, or let's talk about my hair. You want to talk about my hair? I couldn't get it right.
See, but that's what makes this whole Larry David thing so funny, is because these are all things that happen in our lives. We're just too nice to ever do that. How many times do you want to say, you know what, I just want to reset my relationship with that person?
Yeah, well, we should all learn to, we should have reset button.
The thing is, we can all think of this right now, and it is, people in places like security guard, boom gates, that kind of stuff.
I don't have a problem with it.
Well, of course you don't have a problem, because know, you like talking about yourself.
I'm a different breed of person, but I really don't have a problem with it. The other day I just realized I was at the till at a store, and I'm like, well, we have been talking for a good, like, almost 15 minutes with this lady and I, and we've actually shifted to the side. She isn't manning her till anymore. I'm getting to ask what she's doing for Christmas. Like, it was great.
No, yeah, that would be fine unless my belly was next in line at that till, and she's like, oh, that fucking guy.
Oh, yeah, we don't care.
I would just move next door to the other till.
No. So would I. But imagine if that was the only till open and see and she having a fat chat. You know. It's just weird. Like, I do understand that there are times where you do meet someone and you start talking and you're having a good conversation.
Mm.
That, I'm not, I don't have a problem with that. I have a problem with when you don't want to.
Mm-hmm.
And then this person does. There's got to be like a green flag, red flag situation.
Yeah, obviously talking about this makes you sound like a complete and utter dick. Because as humans, we should be communicating with each other. It's like the guy cuts my hair. I feel like I'm fiercely managing this relationship.
Yes, you manage the relationship.
Like,
yes.
I like him. I think he does a superb job. He's good value for money and literally is. It's all about geography for me. He's a two-minute walk away.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel if one day we talk too much, then that's finished.
You'll ruin
that will
whole
be the new benchmark, yeah. And it'll be a bit tedious. So
do you
right
know his
now,
name?
No, he doesn't know my
you
name.
You don't even know his name.
Doesn't know my name either.
That's great.
Basically, he knows what my credit card looks like.
Can he speak English?
Yeah, enough.
What? Where's he from?
Turkey.
Okay, so that's that already helps because he's fine.
And basically, we exchange pleasantries. He always asks me what I want, even though I want the exact same thing every single time. So there's a quirk. And that's where we go. That's what we do.
See, I spoke to an Uber driver about this once. We had a long trip, and the guy was like, you're okay in back? So I said, yes, I'm fine, thank you. So he said, some people talk all the time while I drive. Talk. You don't talk. So I said, no, I've busy with an email or I'm on my phone.
Where was your Uber driver from?
I don't know. It's like also the Middle East somewhere. So I said, yeah, but it must be annoying when these people talk the whole time. He says, very annoying.
Oh.
I try to concentrate on road. These people look for friend.
Oh.
I am driver, not friend, he says.
He needs to get himself a partition.
Yeah, well,
just roll that up.
Wouldn't it be funny when you open up your Uber app and you get the star rating and then there's like
it's
a
talker or
and
non-talker.
Talker, non-talker. Yeah. I go, talker, yeah, I want that guy. Non-talker, no, I want that guy. It's just like an emoji. You get like the emoji with no mouth and then the emoji with
a
mouth.
This guy is saying to me, I mean, look, eventually we did start talking, so he's not a complete mute. But he said he's getting updates on new routes and traffic and things, and he's trying to be the best driver he can. That's his job. He wants to drive. He doesn't want to talk. He says, I'm not there to be someone's friend.
Yeah, you don't see Lewis Hamilton asking the pits what they had for lunch.
Mm-mm.
He's driving.
Wow. And I think we have a problem in this country with that kind of thing. It's like we don't understand that some people are... There are obviously lots of us who like to talk and, you know, we want to get along and it doesn't matter what your job is and what my job is and where we come together and how we intersect with each other because we want to maybe have a conversation. But they're also those people who really are just, they're trying to do their job. You need to get something or do something and you don't need to be friends. Does that make sense?
I do. Yep. I hear you guys.
Like sometimes the... When you go to the garage to fill up your car, you don't need to have a big conversation. You know what I mean? The tires need to be 2.4 all round. That's the conversation. I'm sure that there's a lot we could discover about each other, but I've had a long day at work, and I'm not really looking for more friends. Makes you sound so callous.
No.
It's true, though.
Yeah, but I've seen Sia operating.
Yeah, that's right.
And his life just generally seems like it's just more filled.
That's why I'm just keeping mum on
just
this topic.
Just from taking little bits of everyone that you meet every day.
Right.
And you're always in a good mood.
No, literally even last night, I was filling up. That's why that example seems so apt. I was filling up and somehow I just saw the guy who was filling up my car. He had a bit of an awkward moment with the customer before me. So we were chatting about that. Uh-oh. And, you know, I gave him a shoulder to cry on afterwards.
Wow.
Was the customer before him rude?
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Now, you see, I hate
that.
See,
you're a
too.
Nice person.
You don't need to be rude.
You're a nice person.
But I do get it. Sometimes you don't feel like going into someone's life story. And yeah. that's when, you know, for example, when you're filling up your car, you don't wind the window down totally. You know, you just, that's what I do when I'm not in the mood. You just wind it just enough so that they can pass in the card machine to you. Yeah. And likewise, and you keep your head down.
That's a bit rude, yeah.
No, that's not true. That's drawing your own boundaries.
What Mub said just now, see as a nice person, that's true. But you can also be a nice person who doesn't really feel like engaging at that point.
Yeah, but I mean,
you don't have to be rude.
Yeah, you don't have to be mean.
Never ever be rude.
The fact that he actually gave his shoulder to cry on to the petrol attendant is, it's going out of your way, which like most of us wouldn't because we're horrible people.
But guys, you do realize Seb believes that his life is a reality show and someone is filming him. So that's why he's doing all of this.
But that's why I say his life generally just seems like it's more entertaining than the average
person. Seb is convinced that at some stage Ryan Seacrest is going to go, look, Seb, I've been watching you for the last 6 months and we really do want to give you a show.
It's the Truman Show.
And he'd be like, yeah.
But y'all, I don't understand. You guys should be learning certain tactics like put earphones into your ears even if you aren't listening to anything so that people don't approach you.
No, there are certain people who don't understand the universal rule of earphones, and then they'll just talk at you and you can see them looking at you and they're like, oh, is she really just still talking at me?
Pretend to be on your Bluetooth having a conversation in the car when some guy comes up and wants to sell you something, or just look very glum and angry. It's like the little things. That's how you avoid people.
I got to play you this. This is hysterical. You know, because there are activists pretty much on every subject matter that there is in the world. I mean, here's a feminist who says Christmas songs are sexist.
Hey, what's in this drink?
No halves to be had out there.
I wish I knew how.
Your eyes are like stars right now.
To break this spell.
I'll take your hat. Your hair looks swell.
I ought to say no, no, no.
Mind if I move
in? You know the song, right?
I'm going to say that I try.
What's the sense of her?
That's the classic Christmas song, Baby It's Cold Outside. It was written during the Second World War. It's been a Christmas staple ever since. But some people are now finding offense with some of those lyrics. The song has been characterized as, quote, rapey. Needless to say, there was a politically correct version written and recorded with updated lyrics.
Can I tell you again, everything from the 1940s and 50s, by comparison with today, sounds rapey. All of it. If you were not there at that time, you don't know the context.
Sad sample of it.
What is this dream?
Pomegranate LaCroix.
I wish I knew how.
Maybe I'll help you
to
well.
Break this spell.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh my God. This sounds awful.
Yeah, dreadful version there.
Because first of all, he's a beta male as opposed to an alpha male. So already you're like, what is this? What's going on? What's happening in this man's pants? Is he real?
No, his voice sounds awful.
And he's got a beat a male voice.
But it's like they're trying to harmonize, but they're just.
But you realize they've changed the words. They've changed it to, I really don't know what she's talking about, instead of.
I really can't.
Yeah, and he's saying, like, I'll take your hat, your coat, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so listen to this feminist now.
Quick, which version is more appealing? That's rhetorical, of course. Joining us now, Vox reporter Emily Crockett, who's written a ton about both versions of the song. Emily, it's great to see you.
Great to see you too, Tucker.
Now, feminists, maybe unfairly, have had this reputation as humorless scolds, as you know.
Unfairly, yeah.
I'm not sure attacks on this song do much to fight that perception.
Sure. So, I think your first problem is considering it an attack, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's...
Well, you called it rapey. That's not a positive.
Wait, did I call it rapey?
You said others have called it rapey.
Yeah. So, what I did in my piece is I did two readings of it, right? So, I did the rapey reading and the romantic reading. Because when I listen to this song, I honestly have sort of two reactions to it, right? Like in the context of the time, I think it's pretty clear that, you know, women did not have much sexual agency in the 40s, right? Women were not really allowed to express sexual desire or to, you know, take initiative in starting, you know, a sexual situation. And so they sort of had to play hard to get, or had to just allow themselves to be seduced rather than, you know, say, like, this is what I want. And so...
But the decision was fundamentally theirs, wouldn't you say?
Well, sure. Well...
So wouldn't that put them in control?
Wouldn't what put them in the control?
Well, if the decision is yours, you're not a passive victim, you're in the driver's seat. If the question is, do you assent or not, if someone's trying to persuade you, that suggests it's your decision.
Well, so that's an interesting way of putting it.
Tucker's here to fight.
There's a difference between... So, like, putting pressure on a woman to have sex is just not cool for a variety. Like, there's a difference between, like, a negotiation and, you know, a predation. Right. So when you look at the original version of this song, the interesting thing is that the man's part is labeled wolf and the woman's part is labeled mouse, which is like, oh, that's kind of creepy. But so, I mean, there's when you listen to this song.
Why is that creepy?
Because, you know, like, it's like making the man a predator and the woman a prey,
but
like, instead of an
isn't
equal
seduction
partner.
About ambivalence on some level? I mean,
it doesn't have to be.
Okay, so if it's not about ambivalence, what if it's not seduction, though, right?
Well, the question is, you know, is seduction the ideal?
Okay.
Right? Like, so the question here is, do we want women to have sexual agency? Do we want women to have a say, right? Do we want women to just sort of be, to always only be pursued? Because really, when you look at this
I feel like I'm back at Vassar now in my feminist poetry class. Let me just, I didn't go to Vassar, just kidding. But
I didn't.
So you have this flash of self-awareness at the end of the piece, which I just loved. You said
flash
this. You did. This was the bright part of the piece, I thought. At a certain point, spending hundreds of words close reading a Christmas song starts to feel a little silly.
Oh, of course.
What's the point of yelling at people on the internet about this?
Mm-hmm.
Do you wish you'd stop there?
No.
No.
Well, so it is a Vox explainer, right? Because this is a debate on the internet, and people have been hearing about it and reading about it.
Right.
And the reason I wrote the piece is that people might be curious why this is a debate. So the issue is that it's a debate over whether the song promotes, you know, problematic ideas of consent, right?
Every song. I mean, take any rap song from the 90s. You get the same problem. Look... It's just crazy, and she does... I mean, he's putting her in a corner, and kind of that's also unfair, but it's not really an argument. Don't sing that... If you don't like the Christmas song, don't like the Christmas song. You don't have to use it.
Yeah.
It was written at a certain time. It conveys messages of that time. You know, it's sort of like the American National Anthem about bombs bursting in air, and we don't do that anymore. There's nothing like that going on in life right now.
Yeah.
So are we going to change that so we can, you know, make people who were born 3 weeks ago feel like there's some space for them in it? Or is it about history? I don't know. This whole thing just drives me crazy. People have so little understanding and care and interest in history. That's probably why it upsets me.
You shouldn't let people upset you. It's
no,
such,
I know,
it's
I know.
Such a waste of your energy and time.
It's not people. It's like just read a history book. That's all.
But there's also just, where's the desire to make new things in this world? People keep digging up stuff because they just got nothing. And it's so much easier to just pull something to pieces rather than create your own stuff.
Yeah, well.
So write better songs then.
We are running a little late, so let's get straight into the five things you need to know. Oh, is that a call? Tell them to call in later. We'll get them later. All right. Here's the five things you need to know this morning. It's brought to you by Colcacchio's Pizzeria. That's right. Armed with a fiery passion for... authentic Italian quality and innovation, the Colcacchio journey began, what year?
1992?
Correct, 25 years ago, when their founders opened the doors, the first flagship Colcacchio pizzeria. Today, over 36 branches nationwide, and even some outside of South Africa, they've extended their family stores, their energetic team of staff, as well as what they offer on the menu. It's Colcacchio's Pizzeria. They also let you know what the most important things are in the world today. First of all, the Western Cape ANC chose Ramaphosa for president. Yes, they've put their votes together and they're going to the conference in December next month with Cyril Ramaphosa hoisted on their shoulders as their candidate.
Hmm.
Yep, it's another boost to him. He garnered 121 of a total 145 branch nominations. Nkosi Dlamini Zuma could only muster 13. So, I mean, it looks like things are really going horribly wrong for her. In what can be considered another key victory, Human Settlements Minister Lindiwe Sisulu received the most votes for the position of Deputy President with 98 branch nominations. Isn't that interesting? They also chose Gwede Mantashe as the preferred candidate for National Chairperson with 128 branch nominations. Candidates in other key positions included Senzo Mkhunu as Secretary General, Zingiswa Losi at 60 votes for Deputy Secretary General, and Treasurer General Paul Mashatile with 127. Isn't that cool?
Well, well, well.
Anyway, that's the Western Cape ANC. The Archbishop of Canterbury in the UK says he is baffled by Christians who support Donald Trump. England's top religious authority, the Archbishop of Canterbury, said Sunday that he doesn't understand why Christians in the US would support Donald Trump. He said he genuinely, really cannot believe why anyone would support Donald Trump and at the same time be a good Christian. I don't understand it, he said. He did say he would be willing to attend a state dinner in Trump's honor if the president comes to Britain on an official visit. He noted he's met with worse people than the president of the United States. I spent years and years involved in conflict stuff around the world where I met people who'd killed many, many others, he told ITV. Well, Archbishop of Canterbury weighing in on Donald Trump. A 400-year-old Mesoamerican map of Spanish colonization is now online for everybody to see. That's right, the U.S. Library of Congress has put up a map that so far we haven't seen, which basically has a couple of drawings on it and points to indigenous authors who managed to plot some of the landings of the Spanish in Mesoamerica 400 years ago. So if you're interested in history, there, I was just complaining about how people aren't. If you're interested, there it is, just for you. And here's an interesting story. Beware of modern-day heretic hunters.
Oh.
Ahuna?
Heretic hunters. One of the most sinister noises in the world is that of dumb officialdom groping around to find some reason for a verdict that has already been arrived at. A Canadian university has just given the world a particularly fine example of this. At the University of Ontario, they have a surprisingly high employment rate among graduates. Surprising because the university's authorities would appear to be working hard to make their students utterly unemployable. Earlier this month, the university censured a 22-year-old graduate called Lindsay Shepherd. Her crime has been to show a video of Canadian professor Jordan Peterson debating the issue of gender pronouns. This was in a class on Canadian communication in context. And he is a very good communicator, by the way. He's been on the Renegade Report two or three times, Jordan Peterson. He may, in fact, be one of the only Canadians who's internationally known for an ability to communicate as well as think. So go and read that story, because that's quite interesting. It's in The Spectator today. What else can I give you here? Oh, the DA have gone after multi-choice. They have decided that we want to see all the ANN7 contracts. This is the DA. Their new passion project is to go after a private business and force them to account for why they're involved with the Guptas. Where they should actually be going after the Guptas. This is a quick way to score some easy victory points, right? Low-hanging fruit. Well done, DA. You're dropping lower and lower in everyone's estimation daily. And Susan Sarandon has spoken out and said, I thought Hillary was dangerous. If she'd won, we would have been at war.
This Susan Sarandon keeps saying unpopular things. She's never no chance. We've really got to watch out.
Yeah.
Meryl Streep is going to just take her off Facebook soon.
That's right. So Susan Sarandon, representing the Trump's faction. That's what most Americans believe anyway. One last thing while we're talking about Trump. He's been standing up for this Roy Moore dude.
Who's Roy accused. Moore?
He's the senator from Alabama.
What is he accused of doing?
He's been accused of sexual misconduct by a number of women.
Oh, okay.
So what does Trump do? He supports him and says, don't vote for the Democrat. He's much worse.
Sure.
Okay. Who knows? So those are the things you need to know today. Just a few while we rush through the headlines this morning. Let's get to Ben and see what's going on in the sport. The sport brought to you this morning by Jaguar Land Rover. That's right. If your hair is thinning, your stomach is widening, don't feel too bad. It happens to the best of us in adult life. But nothing will make you forget about your flaws quite like the flawless new Range Rover Velar from Menlyn Land Rover. Mm. A true first of its kind, the Range Rover Velar combines elegant design, sophisticated technology, a luxurious interior, and distinctive Range Rover all-road performance. It's just everything that you could desire from a modern vehicle. Be one of the first to experience the car that will take you anywhere and everywhere with consummate ease by visiting menlyn.landrover.co.za. All right. I got to say, I don't know if these cars are going to be available immediately because they're such a hot hit at the moment that they're on order, basically. You'd have to wait a little while to get yours. Ben, you drove in it with me.
Yeah, and you can see why. Because the thing is, these things are hyped up months in advance, and people go, okay, I'm in.
Yeah. You can see pictures of it online. Yeah. You'll know what I'm talking about. Go and have a look at the interior of this car. The exterior is magnificent enough, but go and look at the interior. Totally different. They've revamped the entire command and control structure. And the screen in front of you, the technology in this car is just second to none. Be one of the first to experience the car that will take you anywhere and everywhere. Give them a call on Pretoria, that's 012-369-2400. That's Pretoria 369-2400 to arrange a test drive. Better yet, head on down to the new improved Land Rover Menlyn dealership. It's only Land Rover Menlyn, huh? We're not talking about the other dealerships. We can't vouch for them, but we can vouch for these guys. Land Rover Menlyn. They're at 221 Gasman Chain Road. It's just off the N1 highway in Menlyn. Walk in there and say, I heard about this Range Rover Velar in Cliff Central. I need to see this thing for myself with my own eyes. And let me experience it. Let me touch and hear and see and taste and feel.
Oh.
Yes.
All your senses.
All of them. Click them into place. All right, Ben, what do you got for us in the sport? You want your music? Look at him waiting there patiently. He sits and looks at me like my dog does when I'm about to fill the bowl. All right, Ben, take it away.
Broadcasting is about consistency, Gareth. Well, England, no real surprise there. One test match in the Ashes, and the Ashes done, and one big loss for the English. 10 wickets. That is, well, it's a proper trousering straight up. So as my Aussie friend said, the Aussies will win this five-test series 6-0. Well, they've already got the first win of the belt.
Huh.
10 wickets.
Huh.
It was all quite evenly poised initially because the pitch wasn't exactly hard or easy to score on. So England scored 302, Aussies scored 328. The scoring rate wasn't really so flash. But then the Aussies really got stuck into the English, and 195 was all they could manage. Stark, Hazelwood, 3 wickets at the beginning. Lyon also with 3, and that was that 195 all out. So suddenly the game was just turned on its head. And with that, the Aussie batsmen came out, just the two of them, Bancroft and Warner. 82 for Bancroft, 87 for Warner, 173 for 0. That is the biggest opening partnership in a fourth innings win. Just incredible. 10 wicket loss straight up. That is going to really kick you where it hurts. And that is how the Ashes have started. In rugby news, it was a better weekend for the Springboks, but then again, they were playing Italy. No offense, Italian rugby fans, but that team is, well, there's nothing really going on there. And I read something very interesting on Twitter over the weekend. It's like, when you keep watching Italy play like this, you've got to ask the question, when is Georgia getting a fair shot at playing in the Six Nations?
Georgia?
Yeah, well, Georgia's making strides in European rugby.
Country of Georgia.
They're making strides in European rugby. Huh. And Italy are just like perennial wooden spooners. So maybe it's time that that was looked into. So Italy, they managed 6 points. South Africa managed 35 in a rainy and kind of dull match, but still, it is a good margin for victory there. And that is all I will say upon that, because I am still very upset about the team selections, the fact the fringe players aren't getting opportunities, the fact that Andrews Kutsia apparently has to play every minute of the year. I don't know why. I don't know how. Well, Australia, that kind of don't want to play any more rugby, I would imagine, after this last weekend. Scotland beat them 53-24. 53 to Scotland, 24 to Australia. So the Aussies got really hammered against the English the week before. But Scotland, well, they made the most of a one-man advantage because one of the Aussie players was sent off for kind of flying into a ruck with his shoulder. And the Scots, well, they believe that they're going to be very competitive in next year's Six Nations. And they took the All Blacks very close, and they just absolutely hammered Australia. So, got to kind of, you know, think, well, this is a team that has limited player resources. But I'm not saying limited as in, like, the box do nowadays. These guys have very, very limited resources. Like, in Scotland, you're either playing Lynx golf, you're drinking at a very early age, or, I mean, you're playing football for Celtic. Very few guys play rugby. Very few. And they've got a great team right now. They've got a great mix. Just showing you what a good coach can do. Gregor Townsend and his team are doing a fantastic job there. And all they're doing is they're taking players they believe in, and they're picking a good side, and they're letting these guys play. None of that happens with a team in green and gold.
Right.
But I said I wasn't going to say anything more. England, they're east past Samoa rather predictably, 48-14. And then the other matches to look out for, well, Wales, they host New Zealand. Wales are the box opponents this weekend. Nothing really surprising there, 33-18 after Wales did have a good start, but New Zealand came on and just won that. Ireland, they beat Argentina 28-19. France, well, look, I'd like to say they go from bad to worse. It's the problem that Japan has beaten the Bucks before. But France drew with Japan 23-all in France. How this French coach has not been fired? It's almost like Sarri is in charge. The French rugby, it really is just going worse and worse by the day.
Yeah.
Into the football.
Well, good, because they're going to have to host it soon.
Yeah, look, they could bribe officials, but they can't seem to get a decent rugby team in. I didn't say bribe, I said influence. TP Mazembe, they are the CAF Confederations Cup champions. Unfortunately, SuperSport could only manage a 0-0 draw at home.
Oh, no.
Which meant that TP Mazembe, they go on to win that on aggregate 2-1, which was exactly the score from the first leg. And the Premier League, interesting matches over the weekend in England. Huddersfield Town, well, they got off to a great start against Man City. But Man City, all they do is win, and the same happened here. Raheem Sterling with the winner on the 84th minute, after Sergio Aguero leveled things up with a penalty in the 47th. So they stay on top. They're going to stay on top the whole season, though. Arsenal, they left it particularly late against Burnley, which is becoming a bit of a habit for them. Sanchez with an injury time penalty. Southampton hammered Everton 4-0. Liverpool versus Chelsea, interesting match that was. Chelsea just scraping a draw right at the end there with Willian. Spurs, they drew with West Brom. I don't know, Spurs are going off the ball all of a sudden after losing to Arsenal in the league, after doing so well in the Champions League, but now dropping points against West Brom, who are actually not so bad. Newcastle hammered again, this time to Watford 3-0. Man United, unconvincing, but they got through against Brighton and Hove Albion, eventually 1-0. And that was pretty much the pick of your matches there. In the PSL, very strange this. Very, very strange. I'm not saying match fixing, but 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 games. 6 games with draws. Interesting that, huh? Pirates got a out-and-out win. They beat Celtic 1-0. But the other matches, it's just so bizarre how these games are all just so identical. Baroka 2-2 with Platinum Stars. IS Cape Town 2-2 with AmaZulu. Golden Arrows 2-2 with Cape Town City. Kaiser Chiefs 1-1 with Free State Stars. In the golf, Wade...
It's so boring for fans.
Yeah, but look, Gareth, this... We all know the PSL is kind of dodgy. Maybe you got a gangster running things. Wade Ormsby.
Who's this guy?
Wade Ormsby. 13 years, a golf professional. 264 starts, 0 wins. 0. Imagine that. You're just plugging away, plugging away. Well, he finally got his maiden European Tour win. He won the Hong Kong Open. Just an incredible sporting story, this. Here's a guy who just really stuck at it and sporting a fantastic, brilliant moustache. He came out on top at the Hong Kong Open. So that's going to change his life forever and ever.
Ah, but the real golf was over the weekend with you, Ben.
Well, of course, Gareth, but I wasn't going to gloat. I was actually at the best tournament of all, the Gary Player Invitational. And, well, this Thursday's Bounce Show is going to be dedicated completely to that. I interviewed some fascinating sporting individuals. Spent quite a bit of time with Gary himself. And it was probably, well, right up there with one of the top two weekends of my year. It was that good. It really was. Not a whole bunch more on the sporting front. More tomorrow, though, as we get set for the final Springbok match of the year. It'll be against a Welsh team who don't seem to have any props. But we'll get into that. Oh, and Formula One's finished. Yeah, no more race.
That in.
Yeah, it finished this weekend.
All right.
In Abu Dhabi. Mercedes won. Vettel didn't win. Bottas won. That's the one. He's the guy. Bottas won. Hamilton second. Everyone was fast asleep.
All right, Ben.
Yeah,
thank
Gareth,
you.
That is pretty much it.
There we go. There's a little sport for you to kickstart your Monday morning. Let's get into some money, shall we? Here is Anthea with the latest. All right, there's lots to cover here, Anthea. Lots. Good morning, and thank you for coming in this morning. It's always nice to see you on a Monday. It's the only highlight of an early Monday morning for many of us.
Me included. Good
right.
morning.
So, where do we begin?
Before we start talking about the markets, can I just quickly tell you about something that I read in the Financial Mail this weekend? So, every week they do a something by numbers, right? This week they did dollar billionaires. There are 1,542 dollar billionaires in the world as of the end of last year.
1,542.
That's right.
Those are potential husbands, Mubs.
Only Mubs.
And Anthea and Amanda. All right.
Which increased by 145.
How many of them are women?
Good question.
No, I wonder how many are women. Be interested.
Very few. Two that I can think of. Betancourt.
No, she's dead.
Well, her daughter, right? Hasn't her daughter taken over?
I think so. I don't know.
Okay. All right. But this is the part, and maybe I'm sounding like a cheerleader for capitalism. But the point I wanted to make was that they employ 27.7 million people, which I think is quite something. I know there's a worry that, you know, the Gini coefficient or the difference between rich and poor in the world is growing, and it is a problem.
Yeah, but you cannot show that there's a correlation between the people who are billionaires and their own staff being the poorest in the world. That's not true.
Exactly.
The poorest people in the world are usually the slaves of governments, not of businesses. And by slaves of governments, I mean that these are people, citizens, who often have very little say in their own future and their own destiny, who are controlled by a system of social engineering. So go and look into that. If you're one of those people who's an arch anti-capitalist, we can still be friends. I'm totally okay with that. We can have long conversations about this. But you need to go and do your research, because to blame the bad billionaires is to miss the point completely.
Mm-hmm. There we go.
So they're employing people, not putting people into slavery. All right, can we first begin, because you did warn about this last time you were here a week ago. You said ratings agencies, it's going to happen. I mean, I heard Labour issue this ridiculous statement about how dare these ratings agencies get themselves involved in our economy. They don't understand how it works. The rating agencies don't care about what's going on in the country.
Yep, I also saw the ANC Youth League posting something saying, can they not be swayed by Pravin Gordhan's arguments? Come on, seriously, that's so naive. So where do we start? On Thursday, Fitch came out saying they would keep us at junk status, because don't forget, they downgraded us previously in April.
Yay, thanks for keeping us junk. So they, sweet of you.
I didn't actually even know that they were scheduled to release a report. In fact, I think it was an unscheduled comment.
Okay.
The big ones, of course, were S&P and Moody's on Friday. Moody's kept us unchanged, but put us on downgrade watch for 90 days, which, if you work it out, is pretty much exactly after next year's budget speech. Mm-hmm. And then, unfortunately, S&P downgraded us to junk. So we had their international currency. They downgraded further because they'd already put international currency on junk. They put our local currency at junk status as well. The big thing about this, of course, is that the immediate impact, South Africa falls out of the Barclays Government Bond Index, and we're looking to see about 50 billion rands worth of bonds being sold this week. If Moody's downgrade us, that will trigger the next fallout of the index, which is the Citibank World Government Bond Index, and that should see another 100 billion rand flow out. Of course, you know how this works, right? I mean, I've been telling you this for years now. We got downgraded. People are going to expect us to pay more to borrow money. I mean, let's not be naive here. We are not in a situation where we have enough money to keep our public finances going, to bolster up our SOEs, which are in an absolute shambles, to pay those fabulous social grants that we release every month. We have to borrow money, South Africa. And if you think for a minute that you can, instead of borrowing money from offshore investors, that you can print money, think Zimbabwe.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, because that does not work.
All right, so what do you do if you're a South African who wants to take rands now and try to make them more valuable rather than less? In other words, you want to protect yourself from what is seemingly inevitable about the currency.
Sure. So you could probably buy dollars. That's the obvious answer.
Is now
right?
Today a good time?
So I saw this morning that the rand is only 14.06 or 14.09 last time I checked, which I think is actually fairly strong considering what happened on Friday. You know, this rand is very strange. Just when you think it has to weaken, it suddenly strengthens.
Yeah.
And I really am struggling with why the rand is strengthening. I mean, are people saying this is a turnaround? I'm not sure this is the turnaround. I think there's more to go.
14.09 at the moment.
Yeah, 14.09. Okay. So that's well.
You would say buy some dollars.
Buy some dollars, for sure. You also, of course, in your pension fund are predominantly exposed to rand hedge stocks, which will do well in a weakening rand environment. And I'm always cautious about advising people what to do, because your liabilities, if you live in South Africa, are in rands. And unless you're planning to move overseas, or unless you're 100% sure that the rand is not going to strengthen again, then it's quite difficult to send money offshore, you know, just kind of willy-nilly, yeah, or at a whim, because
sure,
your liabilities sit here, so your assets predominantly should sit here.
Okay, in theory. And can we talk about, while we're discussing our portfolios, last week was actually kind of a messy week.
Oh, wasn't it?
NASPAS dropped quite a lot.
Oh, twice in a row. So the decline started on Wednesday.
Why? It makes no sense.
It's a combination of the rand was quite strong last week, and I think profit taking, because NASPAS hit 4,100 rand a share last week.
Sure.
So last week, Monday, I was sitting here going, oh, NASPAS, 3,800 rand a share. And then 2 days later, or a day later, it hit 4,100 rand. And then you just saw profit taking. So on Wednesday, the market, NASPAS was down about, was it 3.5% or 4%? If you had taken NASPAS out of the equation, because the market ended negative on Wednesday, the market would actually have ended up positive. Same thing on Thursday. So NASPAS really is driving this market. It's now a quarter of our market.
Sure.
So, yeah, it this heavyweight kind of, it's really worrying. And I think if you'd asked me, I mean, we talk about it every week, about NASPAS, because it's such a big component of our index. Would you be buying a share at 127 times price earnings ratio? Kind of gives you anxiety, right? And when I know it's made up a third of Tencent, which is also on a 50 times price earnings ratio. By the way, you know Tencent is now bigger than Facebook market cap, which I think is quite incredible. So yeah, I think it was just profit taking in NASPAS because of a couple of things, because it's quite expensive, and right, secondly, because the rand was quite stronger.
Okay. I've just got to say to you that on the 10th of October, I bought some Bitcoin. I have more than doubled my money.
I'm very impressed. Well done.
Despite also profit-taking in between.
No, that's brilliant. I love it. You know it's going to end badly, though, right?
Oh, really? Is it? Is that your point? Oh, tell me more.
Look at that graph. When last have you seen anything like that?
I don't look at these graphs. You would know.
The 1800 Dutch tulip bulb bubble. I'm just saying. Listen, I'm not opposed to Bitcoin. I think it's great, and I think people should speculate, but be careful, because it can't carry on up. You know that, right? So, and how do you know when to take your money?
Why do you say can't carry on up?
It
if
can't.
More people all there over is, the world, I mean, there's a tiny number of people invest in Bitcoin by comparison with people on stock markets, for example. And if these people no longer want to be prey to the vicissitudes of markets and of governments, and they instead want to go to a place where they will determine the value of something and it will be able to be exchanged.
Okay.
Currencies don't come into it.
Yeah,
determine the value. How do you determine the value of Bitcoin? Tell me.
Well, at the moment, it's completely, you've often said, it's a feeling thing. It's got no basis in any kind of fundamentals.
Well, there you go.
There's people participating in it. There's the value.
Yeah,
a shit ton of people are in
exactly.
it.
Exactly. So.
I mean, why would you buy tin or aluminium or silver or gold?
Because it has value. You can buy tin and sell it on to somebody. Yeah, right.
Right now, you could sell Bitcoin onto anybody.
Anybody who will buy it, when the buying stops.
Yeah, but I don't want to buy tin right now.
But isn't that true for gold?
So gold is the other thing I really don't like. Right?
I know you don't.
And look what happened to gold. It's yeah. exactly the same thing. It came off. It did this. So the gold graph is probably also at some stage in the history of markets looked the same as Bitcoin. It doesn't anymore. It's come the other way.
Mm.
So there you go. I'm not completely anti-Bitcoin.
I'm just asking because I know it riles you and it gets you irritated.
And we do sit in the office and have a bit of fun with Bitcoin every once in a while. But I cannot tell you to be buying Bitcoin as a fundamental investor because I know it has to come off at some stage.
All right, CPI.
Oh, our inflation number, yes. So inflation for October came in at 4.8%, which is slightly lower than September's 5.1%, but exactly August, which was also 4.8%. Risks definitely to the upside, though. Food price inflation has eased a little bit, so it's now 5.3% year on year compared to 5.4% the year before. And don't forget, food was double-digit inflation last year. Like early part of last year, right? Mm-hmm. So we've seen grain decline because now the drought is over. Meat prices have stabilized. And when I say stabilized, at 15.5% year-on-year increase. So you're paying 15.5% more than you did for meat last year this time.
That's crazy.
It's very depressing. But I think at least inflation is in this kind of 3 to 6 Reserve Bank target band, and it does make us feel a bit better. The one thing I am worried about is that I suspect today and this week the Rand will weaken again, and that Eskom, how very kind of them, have lowered their tariff application for next year from an average of 19.9% to the direct consumer to, they are now applying for an 18.9% increase in your electricity price. I mean, like,
so they're going to raise it, but they're not going to raise it as much.
They've applied, but they've said we're not going to apply for a 19.9% increase. We're only going to apply for an 18.9%. Oh. Is there not enough sarcasm in my voice?
Yeah. Yeah. There it is.
So this electricity story is a worrying thing. By the way, did you see that Melusi Gigaba did a bit of a U-turn on the nuclear deal?
What do you mean a U-turn?
Because before he was saying, we don't have money for nuclear. Now he's saying, we might have to consider nuclear.
Yeah.
The biggest surprise.
Well, I read this talking about Eskom. Once the biggest and most efficient producer of affordable electricity on the continent. Once. Now reduced to a penniless beggar under the watchful eyes of this government.
Totally. Yep, that's you. You've summed it up.
Frightening.
Gareth, last week I had a couple of conversations with offshore managers. So managers who invest in emerging markets. And I must tell you, we have fallen completely out of favor. Last year or 6 months ago, they were still saying to me, you know, there's a chance it could possibly happen. We do have to have some money invested in South Africa because there could be a nice turnaround and we want to catch the turnaround. You know,
sure.
Investment managers
makes
do that,
sense,
right?
Yeah.
Forward thinking. Last week, it was all negative. They were telling me South Africa has no human capital anymore. They're saying we're lagging behind Asia so badly that they're just streaks ahead of us. In fact, we're even lagging behind Latin America. And they're just like, what are you guys doing? You were on a good wicket and now you've thrown it away. That is the general sentiment of offshore managers.
Shit.
Yeah, it's pretty bad out there.
All right. Thanks for that. I saw that they did have a Reserve Bank meeting.
And they left rates
unchanged. Same as they were.
And basically, Lesetia was saying, you know, inflation is now in check, but there is so much uncertainty that we cannot risk cutting interest rates. And I'm sorry, that's how it is. Basically, that's what he was saying. You know, he's saying, so he kind of went through it. You know, they revised growth slightly up to 0.7%. So still really very, not very good, I'm afraid. And inflation's in check. The Rand is fine, but these downgrades. So, of course, he spoke before the downgrade on Friday, and he was just nervous about that. And then, you know, we're getting a big petrol price hike in December. Mm-hmm. And he pointed to the fact that we're in such a bad situation that invariably higher taxes, low unemployment are going to have negative impact on us as the consumer. So they left rates unchanged on Thursday, unfortunately.
All right.
Yeah. That's how it is, which is so the other way around to the U.S., because in the U.S. on Wednesday, they had their U.S. unemployment or jobless claims, they call it, you know, when you apply for your unemployment stipend or whatever you call it, mm-hmm. that thing. It declined by 13,000 to 239,000, so slightly below the expected 240,000. Last week was the 142nd straight week that jobless claims remained below the 300,000 threshold, which is considered to be a strong labor market. So the U.S. labor market is the strongest it has ever been since the 1970s. I mean, and then there's us with 27.7% unemployment. It is the fact that we can't take advantage of this global growth story is very depressing, because you know at some stage it's going to turn, right?
Yeah.
And then the global growth will come down, commodities will come down, and then South Africa won't have any support for growth. So we better fix this now. We really should fix this now.
All right.
Should you talk about a few companies?
Mr. Price and PPC, maybe.
Okay, let's do that. So Mr. Price released their first half 18 results. It looks like they're finally turning it around. Diluted headline earnings per share was up 23.4%. Operating profit increased by 22%. And gross margins, which is the one we always looked at, increased by 280 basis points or 2.8%. So they've done very well. Strict cost control measures. Just Mr. Price, finally. It is one of my favorites. You know that. But then they've had 18 dreadful months. So
yeah.
Let's hope they can keep this going. And then you asked about PPC. They rejected Fairfax's offer last week. So Fairfax were the first people to say, we want to buy PPC. So the Fairfax is a U.S. company, and they were going to finance Fairfax Equity and AfriSam. So the whole idea was that AfriSam and PPC would merge. It kind of leaves AfriSam out in the cold. The whole story there was that PPC was saying, well, I'm sorry, but we're worth a lot more than R5.75.
Yeah.
And remember when they did bid R5.75, the share was trading below R5. It suddenly spiked to above R6, traded all the way up to 7 odd, took some profit, kept some of it. I see it's back now at 6.80, I think, 6.60, somewhere around there. But that's because it's still an asset in play, and we still have Lafarge Holcim and CRH, which are looking to make cash offers for a controlling stake in PPC. So you probably, if you bought when we said you should buy, you probably made some money. I would say take half of it off the table and maybe hold on to see where, if the bidding war continues. Let's hope for that.
Okay. Yeah. Cool.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Anthea.
That's my pleasure. Have a good
week. Look at the markets this week and everything involved in them, including a little bit about the ratings agencies and even some cryptocurrency discussions, which I know we'll continue to have. All right. Thanks, Anthea. All right. Let's get into Said by Sia this morning. Here are the important things that Sia has gathered up, rounded up this weekend to inspire you with.
Well, I particularly love a good, heartwarming story of hope. Hope, for me, is one of the best feelings simply because it just keeps this belief and this feeling that there might be something better and brighter and beautiful just around the corner. And I think this morning's story just epitomizes that to the 10th power. So here's a story of a man by the name of Lauren Kreitzer, who 6 years ago was living in a shack.
His name is Lauren?
Lauren. L-O, okay. But L-O-R-E-N.
Okay, gotcha.
There you go. So 6 years ago, he was living in a shack and he was just scraping by on disability checks from a car accident back in 2007. That
right.
cost him his leg and left him out of work until he saw a television segment that would change his life. So he's from California and he was watching an episode of Antique Roadshow. Do you know that show?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. So that's where he saw this rare Navajo blanket that was said to be worth $500,000. Now this was when he was actually kind of shocked and taken aback, because he happened to own a Navajo blanket himself that looked identical to the one on TV. So according to Lauren, the blanket had been passed down through his family from generation to generation since his great-grandfather got it back in the 1800s. And so upon seeing this episode on TV, he went around to several antique organizations only to be turned down. But despite this rejection, this determined amputee took the blanket to John Moraine Auctioners back in 2011, and that's when he found out that he was actually sitting on a gold mine. So they actually evaluated his blanket and they found out that it was worth, get this, $150,000.
Nice. So this guy was down and out, and now suddenly he's got a very expensive blanket.
Oh, yeah. But it gets, listen, it gets
a
better.
A very expensive blanket.
He then agreed to put the blanket up on auction. He says that he prayed for at least enough money to just get a better house and not live in a shack. After a 77-second bidding war, this was ferocious, at least, that pushed the blanket's closing price to 1.5 million US dollars.
Wow, good for him.
Which remains still to this day as the most expensive item that John Moraine auctioneers has ever sold. So after taxes and fees, Lauren was given 1.3 million US dollars. He says it was hard to grasp. He worked his entire life. He was in construction and he never bought anything. He never saved anything and he's always rented. He bought used cars because that's all he could afford and he lived paycheck to paycheck his whole entire life. And now that he's officially a millionaire, like, this is ridiculous to him. So what I also like about what he's done is he actually took his money, he invested it in some stocks, he's bought a house in California, he's married his longtime girlfriend who had stuck with him through thick and thin, and he also bought himself a nice car. So to this day, Lauren still credits the dirty old blanket that sat in his closet as a one thing that saved his life. So I think
very
the
good.
One thing we can take out of this is, as bizarre as it may be and the chances of how likely it would be that something like this would happen to us, I think the recurring theme and the lesson to take of it is hope. You just may never know what lies around the corner in your life. So we all need a bit of hope as we start our week off this week. So that's it by Sia this morning.
Very, very nice. Just one other little bit of inspiration this morning. Well done to Demi Lee Nell Peters, who's Miss Universe 2017.
Yeah. Our Miss South Africa this year is officially Miss Universe. Yes.
Listen, I heard that when Steve Harvey first made the announcement, people just kind of held their breath.
Steve Harvey is still booked for this gig?
They waited for like a good 30 seconds before they started applauding. No.
It's time for another host. No.
You're doing this year for free?
No, Steve Harvey is good for this job.
Miss Universe.
I still don't know what the hierarchy is, though. Because there's a Miss Universe and there's a Miss World. Right. So is Miss Universe higher than Miss World?
Well, the universe is everything.
Yes.
So, you know, I would say, and because we've just won it, I'll say universe is more important than world. They're owned by different people. So the universe one used to belong to Donald Trump. Now it's owned by someone else. Miss World is owned by, what is their surname? Morley. Julia Morley.
Oh. Yeah. Because Rolene Strauss was Miss World.
Well, that's great. Look at us.
Demi Lee Nell Peters, still a mouthful.
In the last 5 years, we've been Miss World and Miss Universe. When did Rolene win?
Yeah.
Like 2 years ago. Not even 5 years. Last 2 years, we've had Miss Universe and Miss World. South Africa is now in a position where we can say we have beautiful women. But don't get ahead of yourself, because that's what Venezuela used to say. And look at them now, begging for toilet paper and lining up around the street for a toothbrush. Let's hope that's not the case for us. Let's hope we can have beautiful women and a successful economy, all right?
Yes, Rolene won back in 2014.
Okay.
And they actually...
3 years.
I was surprised that... they streamed this live here on South African television, but it was like at 4 a.m. this morning.
It's great. We had an entry. An entry who won.
And well, supposedly she won through good comments that she made. You know,
So she didn't say stupid stuff during the questions. But then she's not stupid. We've met her before. She's great. All right. Just after 7 o'clock, it's cliffcentral.com on a Monday morning. Let's get your day going, shall we?
This is CliffCentral.com.